Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday morning here in London, and this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space for another week of our Turning Towards Life project. We are so glad to be able to do this every week and to welcome so many of you alongside us. So good morning to all of you who are joining us at a slightly earlier hour live on Facebook. You're so welcome to be with us. And to all of you who we know catch up on YouTube and on our podcast, we are very, very glad to have you with us. And we have another wonderful source that Lizzie has chosen this week.
Hello, everybody. I want to say it's lovely to see you, but I can't see you, but it is lovely to be with you. And it's lovely to be here with Justin. And yeah, increasingly, I think I said this before, it does feel like we're on a radio show or something, and I'm suddenly getting a more compassion for what it takes to keep introducing something and to keep fresh and to keep real. And to, I wonder how it is to be like one of those people who does morning shows or something whenever we do this. And this is only once a week. Can you imagine if it was every day? And finding a new way to say hello. So I feel, again, completely supported by being here, supported by choosing a source. This one comes from a really lovely, big, big, big book of poetry that is a compilation by, it's called The Rag and Bone Man. Have you heard of that, Justin?
No, no.
Very big poetry book, and it's poems for men, basically. And of course, this is about a man, this source, which, and it's called Sometimes a Man Stands Up During Supper. And I also don't think it's limited to men, but this is I think it's The Rag and Bone Shop of the Heart is what it's called, this big lovely book. And it's compiled by Robert Bly and I think James Hillman and Michael Mead. So it's a very beautiful kind of men's work compilation of poetry. And I was flicking through it the other day and this just completely jumped out at me. And it's a source that really, really moved me. And I'm not 100% clear on how to articulate why yet. So I'm going to be really interested to see what comes from being in conversation about it, because I can feel the power in it and it's not obvious at the same time. So I'm going to have a read. And then Justin, you can read after. Mm. So sometimes a man stands up during supper. And this is by Rainer Maria Rilke, translated by Robert Bly. Sometimes a man stands up during dinner and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. And his children say blessings on him as if he were dead. And another man who remains inside his own house dies there, inside the dishes and the glasses, so that his children have to go far out into the world toward that same church which he forgot.
I'm just pausing because already Lizzie, hearing you read it is having such an impact on me. So here we go. I was chatting to someone this week, Lizzie, about what we call these things that we read. And we've been calling them sources. You know, and I suppose you could call them lots of other things. You could call them readings, or you could call them texts, or you could. But sources feels like exactly the right word for me, because what these are, all of them, when they come in between us and into this big conversation, is they become like the flow of a river or something. They're a source of, or a spring. They're something gets born from them, which is why they're a source rather than a study passage or any of those things. So I'm really pleased to have this source between us, and I'm going to read it now. So this is Sometimes a Man Stands Up During Supper by Rainer Maria Rilke. Sometimes a man stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. And his children say blessings on him as if he were dead. And another man who remains inside his own house dies there, inside the dishes and in the glasses, so that his children have to go far out into the world toward that same church which he forgot.
So I'm going to try and say some things here.
Yeah.
So the way I feel this invitation . So the dynamic in the poem is a parent and child. And for me, that can be a literal thing, and importantly, a very literal thing, but I think it's also a metaphorical thing. And so if you have the reference of children, you might read it in this way of there's a man and his children. But also if you don't, it feels like it can be read in a way that we are with people in our lives and we are linked to others in many profound ways, whether it's a parent-child relationship or a husband and wife or a girlfriend and boyfriend or siblings or friends, colleagues even. Maybe we're in even a position of power in an organization, or we're somebody's manager or a leader or something. And I feel like this is a very beautiful, poetic way of speaking about systems and how in the dynamic of father and children, there is a power dynamic. So what the father is, what the person holding power in the system is, has a big effect on the rest of the system. And so as the father moves to what metaphorically is mentioned here as a church, i.e. a place where reflection, being accountable, shifting one's life in a way, deepening one's learning might happen. If that person doesn't do it, it's left to the others to do it. And where the children say blessings on him as if he were dead, feels like it's speaking of the fact that the reason I would even leave to go to the church means that my identity is shifting and therefore I need something. So there feels like an opening at the center, in the middle of those two verses, is this articulation of the opening. And many of us, I'm sure, can feel like when something big shifts in our internal world or in our lives, as a difficult circumstance or a joyful one or something where identity gets put into question in a massive way, a certain kind of seeking might begin. Like we might look to deepen relationships in our community, or we might seek therapy, or we might ask for help in some way. And in that process, we become different. So our habitual identity gets kind of broken in some way, broken open, and then different things can be seen and encountered. And I think this poem is a deep validation for those of us who do that already as a matter of course. We seek out our church, we find community, we study different things, we have a spiritual practice, we attend reflective communities, we speak in different ways than the normal habitual way of socially getting on with life, and ultimately seek connection in a different way. And I think this poem is really articulating that if we aren't up to that ourselves, there's a way that it leaves that work to others, which in a way is just fine. But it also speaks to me of how we can be part of the system shifting in a way towards health, towards freedom, if we take the steps towards our own church, and that it's not a selfish thing or a sacrificial thing, or, well, we might sacrifice something, but the thing we sacrifice is worth sacrificing for the opening that it can bring to be in our own inner work, our own self-reflection, our own contemplation of large life questions. And I love it that this opens that place in me of the interconnectedness between the different parts of the system.
Oh, wow. It's so exciting hearing you talk about it this way. You know, it's one of the things about being in relationship and in conversation about having a source between us. And of course, it's not just between us, Lizzie, it's between us and Robert Bly, and us and Raina Maria Rilke, and us and everyone who's listening, and us, and there is really a way in which it's arising because of all of that. And then, but here we are, you and I, and you're talking about it in a way that brings forward a whole world of meaning that's exciting and revelatory for me to hear. And I can feel all kinds of things stirring in me from you saying it. And there was something of all kinds of things. I can feel like 100 directions coming from what you've said, different things that might be to say. But the part that's moving me right now is the part that you said, whether or not we do this, whether or not we stand up and walk, makes a profound difference to us and to the people who are around us, whether they're our children or our colleagues or the communities in which we live, or, you know, rings and rings and rings of connection. It makes a difference. And at the same time, it doesn't make a difference, because the whatever it is towards which walking is required, someone's going to take up somewhere. But at the same time, it really does make a difference, because if we don't walk, one way of saying it is, that really struck me as you're saying, is that if we don't get up, and I think this is one way about remembering ourselves, of course it falls to other people, but sometimes one of the traps is that other people end up having to do what really was ours to do. So I'm thinking about this in a family system. This is where it's most apparent to me. And I know you're talking about lots of other systems that are really useful and really important, but when, let's just take the language of the poem. I'm just going to talk straight into this language. And I know there's lots of other ways of talking about, we could talk about mothers as well as fathers, but I'm just going to use the language of the poem. The winner, a father doesn't do this work, one of the consequences is that sometimes his children have to do the work that was really his, not what was theirs. That's one of the risks that we have. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, very much was in mind for me was something that the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber says, which is, there's only ever going to be one of you. Mm. There will never be another encounter with life that's configured like you are. It's a one-time event. So what will you do with that? Mm. Will we respond? Will we honour? I don't mean this in a grandiose way. Like, will we honour our particularity, our uniqueness, and find out, this is one of the real gifts of this poem, there's a church that stands somewhere in the East Who knows exactly where it is? All we know is it's not here exactly, and it's going to take walking, and it's going to take keeping on walking. So there's something very wonderful about this, that it's not final. It's about being on a path, which I think always is what we are in human life. And as I'm speaking about it a little bit more, Lizzie, this is reminding me of something that you've brought in and expressed very beautifully some weeks ago when you wrote a source which had either this or this. You know, it's this or this, and it's this or this, or it's this or this. So it's striking me that at every moment it's the case that we can walk towards that which is uniquely calling to us, which always involves a giving up of something and always involves a kind of death. Or we can forget ourselves inside what we're in the middle of and leave it to other people to go out into the world to do our work. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the part that makes this also a kind of an act of care for us not to ignore this because of what we end up leaving for others to do that may not be theirs.
Yeah, and I just feel the comfort right now of the possibility that this piece of writing paints for all of us. And I'm struck by the way that you're talking about the path and what this man is leaving to get onto the path to walk towards the east is supper, which of course is like the most ordinary thing that all of us might do together is eat. I feel like that represents the, in a way, our asleepness. Of course, a supper can be most beautiful, joyful, communal loveliness. And many times it is. And I also know it's one of those things that happens every day, and we eat a lot. And I feel like it represents this possibility that the rhythms of our life, even the mundanity, the everydayness of our lives, kind of represents that habitual part that we often talk about, our kind of modus operandi, the kind of automated self that just goes through the motions. But there's a way that this poem paints the possibility that there is a place to go, a place to seek out that does exist, that when we remember ourselves and remember our own needs, deep needs for connection or help or communal inquiry about what it means to be a human, there is absolutely a place to go when we feel broken out of our knowing what on earth to do now. There is a place to go, and it's there. You know, I feel very, always very, very inspired by people, and I include myself in this, like, you know, people, and you, of course, Justin, who, you know, we're really wondering what our part in things is, instead of, not that we never blame the world, because there are moments of feeling like a victim of our circumstance all the time, but that there is a route to non-blame, to how might I shift, because I know I'm part of the system, that I can make a change that will change the system, and feeling into that empowered place, and that more is possible than we can see in our blinkered habitual lives, and that we find the means to connect so that we can plug into those spaces and places and people and conversations that enable this to happen. And also I'm moved by the fact that there are these very established communities that are doing this, like really deep inner work around trauma and around family systems, like you were saying. And also this poem is about men. And everywhere I look, I'm pretty much able to find a very, very unhappy man somewhere in the scene. And I'm of course not saying that women aren't unhappy and lots of people aren't happy, but there's something particular about the role that the typical role of men in our world and in the world I see that is kind of heartbreaking because of all the stereotypes around how men should be in the world. Like they should be earning the right kind of money. They should be strong. They should be taking care of people. They should be completely sorted and all kinds of things. And this is a big calling for any man, I think, to take up their inner work, their inner lives. And if there's healing to be done, to take those steps. And so, of course, I can feel this for myself as a woman, and in any system I'm in, I can feel that when I shift my world, the system shifts because the way I interact with it shifts, and that has an impact on other people and other parts of the system. But I feel like there is a big conversation to be had, and I know it's being had in many places, of what it means to be a man and to be vulnerable and to be honest about what it's like to be here and to be in the whatever the ancestry I'm in and whatever the family I was brought up in and whatever the education system I was in was. And I just feel very moved by, particularly by men who are willing to make the admission that maybe that they're not okay and to ask for help. And when that happens, because of the nature of power in the larger system of power that men hold, I think in a way the more power we hold socially, the bigger impact we have on whatever we're interacting with and holding in our lives. And so I just want to say that as well as a kind of an emphasis that this is a poem that, who knows, maybe Robert Bly translated it in a certain way because he is one of the biggest, beautiful advocates for men and shadow work in the world that I've certainly encountered. And it might be that he's used language that really emphasizes that. And I want to honor that because that's the kind of work that he does, is that he enables the journey for men in the world to go on that can really shift so much. And I really appreciate that is the language used here. And I think it's an important conversation to be in, even though there's 100,000 more that we could be in.
Oh, I'm so moved that you're bringing this in, Lizzie. And I think one of the ways in which I'm really moved is because you're a woman and I'm a man and we're having this conversation together. And I think that this conversation has to happen between men and women, as well as between men and men and women and women. And of the many things that you said, again, there's a whole world in every part of this that you're pointing to. One of the parts that came very strongly to me was the suffering and the damage that there is to men because of the way power has gone in the world. And it seems to me that there's no doubt that we're in the midst of, at least where we live and in other places I can see, we're in the midst of a multi-generational grappling, wrestling with all different kinds of power, relational power and hierarchical power and political power and all kinds of things. And men have held and been held in a particular kind of way of having power that's changing and staying the same all at the same time. And it has a giant cost on everyone, including on men, which is what I know Robert Bly's work is so oriented around. And I know you and I have spoken about that as in my own life, as I've been grappling with. Well, I'll say it this way, that I think it's one of the things that's really strongly implied in Rilke's poem, but not said directly, is how much pain and grieving there is, whichever path you choose here. As well as life and love and joy, to stand up in the middle of your life and to walk outdoors and to keep walking towards something that nobody knows really where it is, but it's somewhere in the east, is to lose things. And it's also to stand outside of the predominant narrative about men that we have in, at least in this culture at this time, which is something like all the things you said about not being vulnerable. And but it's also, I think you said this actually, you really ought to know where you're going and why you're going there and be absolutely certain about it. And your job is to achieve it. Mm-hmm. And this is an invitation to something radically different, like an uncovering or a discovering, a lifelong, which ends up with our children saying blessings. And then there's another path, which is much more like the, the other way has suffering in it too. It's not like one path sorts everything out. And I think as I'm saying this, that's one of the, it's one of the terrible constraints of any account that we have in our culture about, for example, what it is to be a man or a woman, let alone all the other kinds of identities that people are grappling with at the moment, that says there is one way to be this, because these infinitely varied beings that we are, when we come into the world with a particular bodily configuration or into a particular culture, it's really easy and there's really strong pressure to go, this is the way for you to be. What a constriction of the human heart that is. And like you're saying, what tenderness and courage and vulnerability it takes to say, maybe there's something else here as well. And the last part of the thought that I had, which was more like a feeling, was one of the reasons that anybody who has, any of us who have any kind of power and privilege, which we've started to bring more into our conversation here, one of the reasons that we end up oppressing other people deliberately or inadvertently and ourselves, one of the reasons is to hold on to the power that we have. But the other reason is because I suppose this is an extension of the same thing, is that in trying to hold on to the power and privilege that we have to cut off so much of ourselves and keep other people the same. Like, for me to be this that I'm familiar with, I have to have you be that.
Yeah.
And that's the rigid dynamic. And that's why I so appreciate what you're saying about it takes, you didn't say it this way actually, but it's what I felt, is it takes letting ourselves be heartbroken, which is definitely not in the contemporary narrative still about what being a man really ought to be heartbroken, so that we can start to even ask the question.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, Justin. It's such a big thing, isn't it? And I so appreciate your ability to meet that. I don't know what it is. I guess it's a narrative breaker that's here in the zeitgeist currently in the world, which has been there for, you know, a long while, but not that long in history, where we're questioning the power. There's many ways that power is being questioned as to its validity and authenticity and what it really generates in the world. And I agree, because of the way that the patriarchy, as it were, the way that we're not a matriarchy so much, but we are, if you look at the world and how that manifests and who's and who in the positions of power, it does tip very heavily towards men being in power. And it's such a thing to hear, and even in the moment of you saying all those things you just said, I can feel the relief just in this system between us, where there's a man who's willing to say, I understand what you're saying and what you're writing, rather than, well, I just want to stay in my narrative, so I can't really hear what you're saying, I don't really understand, or something, or you're being ridiculous, or whatever. It's such a gift, and my wish is that any of that vulnerability is always met with welcome. But I think many times it's not, and it's met with pull yourself together, or get over yourself, or get back to the thing that you should be doing, or something. And I feel so strongly that brokenheartedness is to be welcomed and to be spoken about, and to be there to be spaces created for that brokenheartedness to find its voice and to find what even that is, so that that path to the church that is very much less traveled is integrated as a part of life that's acceptable and viewed in a way that is important, rather than to be kind of hidden or something. And if we can be in any way a stand for and facilitate and be supportive of that brokenheartedness and what it might bring, and Rainer Maria Rilke and Robert Bly are beautifully onto this, thank goodness, like there's people who are pioneers in all of this. I feel like that's a big possible shift in our world that could just change so much from a kind of inner personal perspective, but more widely, systemically as well. And I feel really moved by that, and can feel in my body the importance of that shift that's happening for everyone involved. Like, it's not fair for someone to have a gender to have all the power. It's actually not right. It's not appropriate for humanness that is so. It needs to be a togetherness, a sharing, a cooperation, everyone's valued scenario. And so I just feel really glad of this poem, and glad that I brought it, even though it was hard to know how to articulate this. It feels like this is a place where we can bring things that are powerful but unfathomable, and just because of the setup, because we're here, we can find a way into, wriggle into imperfectly what wants to be said through these sources. So I reckon we're kind of on the end of this conversation now because of our time. And I want to thank everybody for your openness and for listening and for being in this conversation with us. It feels very centering to me and very important, and I'm very glad to have been in this conversation. Thank you, Justin.
Me too, Lizzie. I'm very deeply touched by what you've said, and one of the things that I love about doing this together is that this is something real. We haven't sat and prepared what are the 10 things to say about this poem, but we are in an act together of discovery, and I hope and I know that so many of the people of you who are following and listening are discovering with us. This is a very rich topic we're in, and I'm sure we will continue to talk about it over time.
Yeah.
So I'm also going to say thank you to everyone, and all being well, we plan to be here next week for our 90th week of turning towards life.
Cool.
We'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.